If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 179. I'm Chris, and with me today is...
I am Matt.
So, this is going to be one of our smorgasbord type episodes. August has been kind of a light month on things because it's at the end of summer. The reality of it is August is the last month of summer. When kids start going back to school, summer is over. Regardless of it, September 20th being the date that summer is over. The entertainment industry, they're just starting to get back on their feet with the new shows for the fall. You know, bringing favorites back and starting new ones. And there's very few new ones, actually. We have to wait until way into September before we start seeing the new shows come out. There's not a lot going on in the tech industry because, you know, they're waiting for, again, October to make their big announcements so that they can sell new products over the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays. And, everything else is just what it is until we get more into the holiday season. So I do have a list of things to cover in my notes. I think we'll do them in reverse order because those are the ones that are more recent.
Okay.
So the biggest one is they announced the new hosts for Jeopardy. And I know Matt's, he's kind of rolling his eyes over it, but... it's kind of funny,
they go through this whole ordeal of auditioning celebritards from across the fruited plain and choose some producer.
Yeah. And
that no one's heard of or cares about.
Correct. Well, they chose him and they chose Mayim Bialik. Mayim, I thought, was a horrible host. She was too deadpan. And she was not playing her Amy...
She was playing her Amy Fairfowler bit.
A little bit. But she's going to be the host of the spinoff show. And you can see me do air quotes. The spinoff show from Jeopardy. And then this Mike Richards, who has been an executive producer on The Price is Right. And then he's an executive producer for Jeopardy. It got named the host. Particularly after they, like Matt said, went through this whole slew of people, and then everybody loved LeVar Burton. That's why it's important to me, because LeVar is part of the Star Trek family. And I actually thought LeVar did an excellent job and was a much more congenial host. You're not going to get somebody who was like Alex Trebek. Alex Trebek had 20 years or more to figure out how to be the host of Jeopardy. If you watched the early Jeopardy with Alex Trebek, and you watched it near the end, it's almost like two different people. You know, all the things that we attribute to what we liked about Alex was something that he had developed over a long career as the host of the show. And LeVar's kind of stepped in, and even a couple of the others. Aaron Rodgers did a good job, I thought. You know, they stepped in. They could joke with the contestants, and they had a good rapport with the crowd. But by overall, an overwhelming amount, LeVar Burton was the choice of fans of Jeopardy as the new host. And I don't even think he got considered.
Well, I was surprised that they even auditioned him, because it seemed like they had their slate set.
Yeah, well, he was at the very end. I think that the whole audition process even for him was because fans were saying, you need to do LeVar Burton. You know.
And I think by that point, their decision was already made. The whole thing was just let's let producer dude finish up his contracts on whatever other crap he's doing, and then we'll just make him the host. That's the decision they made before all of that.
But see, now the big issue is Mike Richards has all these allegations of sexual harassment when he was the executive producer on The Price is Right. And there have been at least three, if not more, lawsuits from the models on The Price is Right who have sued, and then they've settled out of court every time. But one of them was even awarded an $8 million settlement because she was fired after she had taken off maternity leave time. And, you know, so, you know, now you're getting the cancel culture backlash on him right now. And it looks like Sony Entertainment's going to have to cave. So what are they going to do?
I don't know. Honestly, if they end up going to LeVar, I hope they wait long enough that he can do his one season appearance somewhere in Picard before he gets to where he can't do it.
Yeah. Well, Picard, the filming of Picard is done.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, but he isn't in it yet.
Yeah.
Well, and until he is, I don't think that
That will affect his ability to be in Picard.
We'll see. I think somewhere down the line he's going to say, I'm too busy.
It's possible. If they didn't catch him now, it may be too late. You're right about that. You know, because, again, just even though he didn't get chosen, it brought him back to the forefront. And so, you know, other projects may be looking at LeVar Burton for his talent. Okay, enough about Jeopardy. I think it's strange that we opened it up with that. So, going back to our science fiction fantasy theme, so have you ever read any of the books, the Wheel of Time books by Robert Jordan?
I have not.
So, if you're a fan of George R.R. Martin, Game of Thrones type thing, it's a 14-book series. Robert Jordan passed away over 20 years ago at this point, I think. It's been a long time. And
they've been talking about doing like a movie series or a TV series
Amazon,
or something for a while.
They're doing both. Amazon has been filming the Wheel of Time series for Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And then and the guy who did, let me pull this up here, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Is the, I think, executive producer / director.
Okay.
Is the showrunner, Rafe Judkins, who was the showrunner for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is in charge of this.
Well, as much chaos as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had telling a story,
That's true.
I'm not super jazzed about that.
But it looks good. Entertainment Weekly has produced, they did an article about it, and they have some shots, cast shots, you know, in costume from when they were filming. And a lot of the pictures, at least what I've seen, they actually look like they're the promo shots taken from the actual series, you know, and it looks good. It looks like they did a good job casting. I'm not going to go into who the cast is. A lot of people do not know who they are.
But that's good, though.
That is good.
When you're talking about a series that's got 14 books behind it, you don't want... I'm still shocked that Marvel has spent as much money as they have on the cast for as long as they have.
Yeah.
Something, a project like this is not going to survive if they spend that kind of money on cast. So I'm encouraged by the fact that there are no-namers in a project like that.
I wouldn't say there are no-namers. I mean, I will drop. Rosamund Pike plays one of the main characters. She's not a no-namer, but she's not a huge namer. She's an Oscar winner.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call her A-list, but yeah. She's a name I'm familiar with, sure.
And almost all the character people in this, I would say there's two or three Rosamund Pike-type character or actors, and then the rest are up-and-comers, which is what I like. You want to, and this show is an ensemble cast thing. You know, what was interesting about The Wheel of Time, just like Game of Thrones, but it was done differently than Game of Thrones. You know, you have this ensemble cast with lots of characters, and you might even see the same events in the books through different characters' eyes, simultaneously, you know, from chapter to chapter to chapter, and they're trying to capture part of that on the TV show. What with, like Game of Thrones 2, the, and I hate to say like Game of Thrones, really Game of Thrones was more like Wheel of Time, but, you know, they're not just covering the history of what's going on. They're covering the political things, and, you know, so it, the show becomes more fully fleshed, and it's easier to have that, you know, suspension of belief so that you can immerse yourself in this fantasy world. The other thing that's weird about this is, so Amazon and Rafe Judkin is doing the series, but Robert Jordan also had a, and the series is based on the 14 books, but he also had written 3 books, which were prequels, and it was kind of the history before this. Those are being made into movies, and those are being done by, I'm trying to remember who it was, and they're trying to not step on each other, and so that the shows and the movies complement each other, but I think it's one of the guys from, who's been doing the DC movies. It's not Zack Snyder, but it's somebody who's been involved with that, who's doing the movie part. So it should be good. And it, they made a point of saying that, you know, they're trying to collaborate together so that the movies don't stand on their own and the television series doesn't stand on their own, but they complement each other and everything. So I thought that was interesting. The, there was another one that was kind of interesting. So, you know, The Eternals has been announced by Disney, and they have a whole slate of characters that, and I don't remember if The Eternals was a comic book or not. I don't recall.
I believe so, but don't.
So the idea of the Eternals is that they're an alien race, they're human-like alien race, who protected Earth in the past. And it's kind of funny, so the characters in the show all have names that are similar enough that you're going to recognize them as our ancient pantheon of gods. Like, one of them's even blatantly named Gilgamesh. But, you know, they have one who's named Athena, as opposed to Athena. They have one who's named Mercurial, a lot like Mercury, you know. And so the idea is they're trying to spin this up. It looks entertaining, but I go back to my fatigue with superheroes at the moment.
Well, I don't know if this is further down your list, but What If has been kind of a sleeper for me. I've not really enjoyed it. I'm watching it. It's 2 episodes in at this point.
What is it?
It's called What If. It's so the first episode was, what if Peggy Carter the serum instead of Steve Rogers?
Yeah,
the second one is, what if T'Challa was Star-Lord? They're just dreadful.
Yeah.
I mean, in and of themselves, mildly entertaining, but what's the point? Why are these stories, why do they even, what do they matter?
Yeah. Well, you know, the fatigue I have, and this is not limited to Marvel in and of itself, which were, you know, Eternals is part of what they're calling Phase 4, but I'm having the same fatigue with DC. As a matter of fact, in a way, at least the production value of a lot of the Marvel stuff is better to a degree than the DC stuff that's, you know, coming out of Fox Studios. it's also how campy can you, you know, the original Batman and Robin, you love it because, you know, from the 60s was great because it was so campy. But today, with the ability, but that was part of the reason it was campy was because you almost had to do it tongue in cheek to, because the technology wasn't there to do all the special effects and everything that you need. Today, I can sit at my desk at home and get on my MacBook Pro and create something that's almost as good as what Marvel is putting out, you know? And because of that, I'm, you know, the DC stuff being as campy as it is, like Legends of Tomorrow has gotten to the point where it's unbearable to watch. Because it's so tongue-in-cheek, and it doesn't make any sense. And but the other thing is they just keep rehashing the same old tropes over and over and over. And, I mean, dad jokes can be funny as long as the dad jokes are new and different. They're using the same dad joke 6 times in every episode, and it's just, it's horrible. And, you know, The Flash has gotten boring. You know, Arrow was getting that way before. Arrow was so good the first 3, maybe 4 seasons of the show. And then when they got towards the last 4 or 5 seasons, it got caught up in the whole idea of their multiverse. And that's another thing I'm tired of, is the whole multiverse story. And although I enjoyed Loki, that's the part I enjoyed the least, was the whole idea of, you know, we're dealing with another multiverse, and so there's multiple versions of the same character, and you know, I the Time Bureau and that whole concept I thought was at least an interesting twist on it. But you know, if this is where the multiverse Marvel is going with the multiverse, I'm already tired of it. You know?
Well, I think part of that was to get us to Doctor Strange 2. I mean, that's a character that you just have to, you have to deal with the multiverse stuff with. And to make him matter, they had to build that world.
Yeah.
For him to do it. Scarlet Witch, same thing.
Yeah, very true. But the difference about her multiverse is she created her multiverse.
Well, they're saying that she's going to have a big part in Doctor Strange 2. We'll see.
I'll have to wait and see when it's on video, because I refuse to pay and go to see something. I'm not paying for it streaming, and I'm not paying for it at the movie theater. So,
I said the same thing about Wonder Woman. I still haven't seen that. 84.
Well, I've seen 84.
I know you have, and well, and that's,
yeah, but that's because it makes sense to pay for HBO Max when you get all of their 2021, 2022 slate of movies.
Sure.
As part of the streaming service.
And why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But that's why I haven't shelled out the extra bucks to watch Black Widow on Disney.
Disney, yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Well,
I'm already paying them. Why?
So I didn't shell out the money, somebody else did, but I have seen Black Widow, and I saw Jungle Cruise with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. The movies are over 2 hours long, which I love, but that's the new thing, because they realized that movie theaters are now secondary to streaming.
Yeah.
And
which is part of what got the whole Scarlett Johansson thing.
We'll go there.
Okay, good.
But the quality of these movies, if you go back to the original Captain America, and which I think is probably, I know you'd probably argue Iron Man, but I thought the first Iron Man was weak.
And the really?
Second, and the second Iron Man was a little weak. First one was better than the second. Third one got much better, because I think the repercussions of the second one being weak. But I think the original Captain America movie is probably the quintessential high-quality Marvel movie.
I would certainly rank it up there.
And these movies don't even come close. You know, the Black Widow, I enjoyed the movie because and the story, don't get me wrong, I actually thought it was, I would watch it again if I had the opportunity to. Black Widow is was entertaining, and I loved the cast of characters, and I was glad that they gave, you know, Scarlett Johansson's character a voice, you know, and where you could see some things, you know, and get a little history of her character. But it was not as tight or as good a story. I mean, you could tell it was much like the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series. High quality budget, you know, for production values. But the story was, you could tell, was secondary. Your telling of events that may or may not really be relevant to the overall, you know, genre or overall story of the Marvel superheroes. And largely the movie was made not to showcase the Black Widow, but to showcase her sister so that they could introduce her for a new series. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, who also appeared in, where else? Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And then, you know, Jungle Cruise, again, it was an entertaining movie, but it was like a Disney Channel movie. You know, they
imagine that.
You know, it was over 2 hours long, and it's about a ride, and they could have done so many things with that movie, tied it in with, and this is where it's a lost opportunity, because they allowed Johnny Depp to be canceled. They couldn't tie that movie into the Pirates movies, which is really where it probably should have been tied to. And so they introduced... The thing that's so stupid about that movie is the movie's over 2 hours long. It wasn't until the last half hour of the movie that they actually introduced and explained the villain and why he's the villain. The villains and why they're the villains. You know, and then they resolve the movie, and it's like, okay, you know, like I said, a Disney Channel movie. You know, they got some big names to come on and rep it, but it was not well, you know, extremely well written. Or, I mean, it was cohesive in the sense that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you have there's a climax, and the climax has a resolution. You know, but it was not like it was, you know, you were shocked by what was going on. And you know, and it was their attempt, which I think is ironic since they own this franchise as well, but it was their attempt to make an Indiana Jones film that wasn't Indiana Jones.
Except that I would say that the Indiana Jones series was probably better written. I've not seen it, but
well,
I would
the
venture that guess just based on...
The first three movies are certainly well written. I mean, that was Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. The fourth movie, The Crystal Skull...
was okay.
It was okay. It was not great. I'm a little leery of the next movie. Because how many years has it been since Crystal Skull? So that's how many more years that Harrison Ford is older. It just they're at some point the characters, the actors playing the characters, are so old it becomes unbelievable.
I'm surprised there hasn't been talk of rebooting Indiana Jones.
I'm surprised as well.
Because it is a big property, and there's really no reason not to
no,
do it.
No, they're at this point.
I mean, with everything else that they've bastardized, my biggest fear about rebooting Indiana Jones is that they'll turn Indiana Jones into an Asian robot chick.
Yeah. Well, you know, so Crystal Skull, the idea was that was actually supposed to be the last Harrison Ford Indiana Jones movie, because Shia LaBeouf, who was his son, is supposed to come in and kind of take over. And of course, Shia LaBeouf got canceled.
Well, and he was horrible anyway.
He was not good, no. But, you know, so now they're having to string Harrison Ford along another time. You know,
I was less convinced that a continuation of that genealogy was going to be compelling enough
to keep it going.
To keep it going anyway.
What I think they ought to do is like the in Solo's story, which I think that's one of the better Star Wars movies they've come out with since Disney has owned the property, is get the same kid from who played young Han Solo in that movie to go play young Indiana Jones and do everything before Indiana Jones, you know, and that way they can introduce, you know, how he and Marion fell in love and, you know, how it ended and all that. I mean, there's so much they could do as opposed to trying to continue it out. Because also, you know, the thing about Indiana Jones is, you know, what's it? It's 1930-something when Indiana Jones is released. And technically, Temple of Doom was before that movie, if you read the Indiana actual books.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been earlier than that. So, you know, I'm thinking, if I remember right, it was like 36, 37 is when Indiana Jones, the original movie, is time. And then Temple of Doom is actually supposed to be 3 or 4 years before that. And then, of course, Crystal Skull is going on during World War II, which, you know, follows after Indiana Jones, or not Crystal Skull, but The Last Crusade, which follows very closely after the Indiana Jones movie in the timeline. And then you get Crystal Skull, and this is like in the late 50s, early 60s. So where are we going to be, you know, now? Are we going to be mid-60s, late 60s, early 70s? You know, and how realistic are we going to get there? I think it'd be more interesting in the suspension of disbelief because, you know, part of what made Indiana Jones powerful back in the 80s when they were talking in the late 30s was the idea that technology hadn't advanced as much, and so people were not as technologically or scientifically minded people. You know, they were trying to set that aside, where Indiana Jones was more of a, and the people he hung around with, they were the elite intellectuals, you know. They weren't respected, but they were the elite intellectuals. And so, you know, that's why you have stories like King Kong that went on and stories like Tarzan, King of the Jungle, you know, because there's this idea that you can put an edge of fantasy in there because in the universe that it exists for that movie or series of movies, science is not as advanced, and so people are willing to believe things that are not scientifically factual. And it was that blend of science and fantasy that made the original Indiana Jones such a powerful movie. You know, because you think about it, it's a combination of science and belief and religion and fantasy.
The Indy series has always, to me, been one of the best of that genre.
I agree.
And it's because you took the two kings of the genre and brought them together. And once Lucas kind of got out of it, you can say what you want about George Lucas, but what I like about George Lucas is that when he has a vision and he sticks to it, he doesn't tolerate the tomfoolery.
Yes.
It's once he's convinced, in order for this to make money, we have to insert some tomfoolery, that's when things go off the rails.
I agree. So also, I know you don't have the streaming service, but I do. But BritBox, which is BBC and ITV's streaming service, last Friday, they input the entire Blake 7 series.
Tell me about that, because I've heard about this series for forever, but I really don't know much about it.
I have not watched a whole lot of it. I remember watching some of it as a kid, because they occasionally you get an episode or two or three episodes of Blake 7 on PBS, but Blake 7 largely in the late 70s. It ran from 1978 to 1981. I believe it was three or four seasons. I don't remember which. But basically, it was BBC's version of Star Wars.
Okay.
So basically, it is so Terry Nation created the show. He's the guy who created the Daleks and Doctor Who. It's a dark space opera about a dystopian future society. It's ruled by a totalitarian regime. God, this sounds so familiar. Called the Terran Federation. They use drug pacification, brainwashing, heavy surveillance to keep others on. God, where did this... where did I hear this before? A guy named Raj Blake, played by Gareth Thomas, you know, who was a big British actor in the 70s and 80s, is a political prisoner, and he escapes with two other prisoners. And they steal a technologically advanced alien spaceship, and basically they're the rebels, and they're battling the Terran Federation through the four seasons of the series. I've only caught episode here or there. I don't know the whole story. My intention is to go back and watch all of Blake 7 now that it's available, and there's a lack of new TV on right now.
Yeah, you better do it quick.
Yeah. So... Because, you know, BBC, a season, they said it could be on for four seasons. That might be 20 episodes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm glad that some of this historical science fiction comes out. You know, it's like when Earl introduced us to
Space 1999,
which you look back today and you scratch your head and you're like, oh, my God. But... In a way, now there was a lot of tomfoolery in that show, a lot more so than the original Star Trek. Only the original Star Trek really only had what I would call tomfoolery, only because they didn't air them in the order of production, you know. But Space 1999 had some huge, they would retcon between episodes, there were plot holes that...
There are characters that are in season one that just disappear in season two. No explanation whatsoever.
Yeah. But, you know, even then, that show was Martin Landau. I mean, he was a well-respected actor at that point.
Barbara Bain.
Yeah.
Was probably as big, if not bigger, at the time.
But, you know, a lot of this was foundational for, you know, things that came later, like Star Trek The Next Generation and Firefly, and I mean, you could probably name 10 or 20 series that were successful, semi-successful, you know, but good science fiction that came after. And Blake 7 was part of that.
You know? Yeah, no, I've it's been on my radar forever, and I've never been exposed to it.
So let's talk about Lower Decks.
Please, so, let's do.
Well, the reason I ask, I've noticed that you've been logging into my DVR where I have all of everything Star Trek. You've been rewatching Picard. You've been rewatching Lower Decks.
Yep.
Have you watched any season two of Lower Decks yet?
I caught the first episode. If the second one's out, I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, well, the third or fourth should be out today.
Okay.
When I
logged in yesterday, day before, when I started Picard, it's because I didn't see episode two.
Well, it's
because
I watched it, probably.
Oh, okay.
Well,
no, the way I get to it is through the TV listings, and I go into the actual season, and it wasn't listed yet.
Senior moment.
What day are they released?
Thursdays.
Oh, well then... Are you saying episode 3 is out today?
Yeah, it should be. That's what I'm...
Huh.
I'm looking at this one. Yeah, Lower Decks. New episode today. I guess second episode is today. I'm just thinking it was okay. The third episode. But, so, Lower Decks is a little bit different take on Star Trek.
Yes.
Partly, and so what's weird is, you know, I complain about how campy the DC shows are. Lower Decks is campy to a degree as well.
It has to. It's
but
a cartoon.
It has to. It's a cartoon. But it's serious enough that it follows the Star Trek timeline. But I really like... I think they've done some really good things in the show. Because I rewatched season one before season two premiered.
Which is why I watched the first episode of season two and I went back and watched them all and then watched the...
And,
watched it again.
I think their ensemble cast is excellent. The, you know, Jerry O'Connell playing
Ransom.
Commander Ransom. Don Lewis playing Captain Freeman. Tawny Newsom playing Beckett Mariner.
Phil LaMarr is a surprise to me.
Yeah.
I actually had to go and, like, I've seen him in other things. He doesn't come off as Phil LaMarr in this, which is, to me, acting brilliance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then I think Jack Quaid as Boimler is... I think those four are awesome, but then the whole overcast that, you know, that they've created around them has been... They interact well together. To be cartoon characters, they it's well written that it there's banter between the characters and the cast, and you can see that it's not the guys who created Rick and Morty who created Lower Decks, but it's one of the producers who produced for Rick and Morty, and you can see that he took some of that Rick and Morty, you know, the banter between the characters, and also because it is something that's on Paramount Plus, it's not something that so they don't have to worry about the censors. So, you know, you can have, like all the other new Star Trek series, you know, they cuss and you know, the characters act like people would, you know?
For the most part.
And there are some episodes that stand out to me. I love the Packlet episode. I love the first episode where Mariner is doing her workout routine in the holodeck, and it's... You know, it's escaping from the Cardassians.
Yeah.
And everything, and you have holodeck characters going, are you doing squats on the bridge? I mean, that's good humor.
It's leg day.
Yeah, it's leg day. It's such good humor in the show, and that's what makes that show campy, is the addition of humor. It's not, they're not making it campy to make it, like Legends of Tomorrow. Legend of Tomorrow is made campy for the sake of making it campy. Lower Decks is made campy because the addition of humor, and you forget that it's not supposed to be a comedy.
Well, I'm glad you bring that point up, because I when you call it a comedy, I go into it thinking I'm going to laugh the whole frickin' time, and I don't.
No.
I might chuckle twice an episode.
Correct, but you still feel like it's Star Trek.
Yeah.
There's a story, and there's some sub-stories going on. I mean, Lower Decks definitely has the whole TNG vibe, where you had a main storyline, and then you had a couple of smaller plot lines, and you know, and you see that go on, like, particularly between Tendi and Rutherford.
Yes.
You know.
For being part of the main cast of this show, they're highly underutilized.
Yes. Yes. But one of my other favorite scenes out of the first season of Lower Decks was when it's in the out credits, and it's like this woman is teaching a bunch of grade school kids, and they're talking about Boimler, and they have him, a big holograph of him up, and then she segues and she goes, and the most important member of Starfleet ever, and they go, Chief Miles O'Brien. You know, there's a lot of Easter eggs, and they cater to the Star Trek fans by putting those in there. You know, oblique references to other series and oblique references to characters.
What I like about that is that they don't dwell on it.
Correct. It's just...
If you catch it, you catch it. And if you don't, you don't. Yeah. And that's the way you have to pay homage to things like that. You don't have to tell a whole new story in a 2.5-hour movie that's an homage to the 3 movies we just watched because that was our childhood. You don't have to JJ everything.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, and I will admit, like in the reboot Star Trek movies, the JJ movies or the Kelvinverse, even though I enjoyed the Into Darkness, you know, the Wrath of Khan reboot, you know, they were pretty heavy-handed on their homage to the Wrath of Khan in that movie, you know. And I can overlook some of the things, because there was enough suspension of disbelief, or suspension of disbelief. That's what happens in the Star Wars movies. But a suspension of belief in that movie that you can kind of forgive some of the continuity issues. The first movie, I actually had a harder time with some of the continuity issues. There's no fucking way a cadet, and I will mark this explicit because I feel this, there was no fucking way a cadet would be made first officer of a starship, you know. And then afterwards, not technically graduate the academy, but now he's the captain of said starship.
What they did, what JJ did was, he was told that he had to be smart about Star Trek lore. And so he kind of cherry-picked from the top of what he thought was important about Star Trek. Oh, Kirk was the youngest captain ever? Great. Well, let's forget all that time he spent on the Farragut.
Yeah.
And let's just boost him to captain right away. Again, it's not respectful.
Well, he was not. You can tell that he was not a fan of Star Trek before him,
which is ridiculous. Because the whole time they were plotting and planning those movies, JJ's the greatest Star Trek fan of all time, is what was coming from Paramount.
Yep.
And guys like you and me were like, you gotta be effing kidding me, man.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It was ridiculous how it was.
And then when he jumped ship for Star Wars and they started the same PR BS,
yeah.
All I could do was roll my eyes. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, you know...
Third time's enemy action.
Exactly. Well, the thing is one of the things that made Star Trek so different from, well, there's this argument. I would argue to a large degree that Star Wars is not science fiction. Star Wars is fantasy that happens to have things like spaceships in it.
Well, it's described as a space opera.
Yes. Well,
I don't call it science fiction. It's a space opera.
Star Trek was science fiction. There was a level, and yes, there's a reason fiction is attached to that. You know, we talk about technobabble and all of that, but that's important to the story. It's part of that suspension of belief that, oh, they figured out the science and how to do it, and so they're explaining it to us. But for continuity's sake, all the details matter. If you have a military organization, you know, rank and how you achieve rank and all this stuff makes sense. And yes, did TNG have some continuity errors? Yes, we have the O'Brien promotion where you went from lieutenant to ensign to chief, you know, which never made any sense. You know, you're going to your chief engineer at your space station is going to be a senior enlisted. Yes. Will there be senior enlisted folks who are doing the work? But the guy who's actually in charge of all the engineering? No. That's going to be, I mean, that's that's a continuity problem, because it logically does not make sense in the way we've already established the rules. You know, now if the rules had been established in Star Trek, that you went from being, you know, you could, based on your aptitude, you went from the Starfleet Academy to being captain of a starship, that would have made perfect sense. You know, Kirk had the aptitude, so he's the captain of the ship regardless of how long he spent in service and, you know, how much experience he actually has. But that's not the way it works. Again, there has to be enough stuff that logically makes sense based upon human history in these science fiction shows that include humans, for it to make sense, you know, for you to suspend belief long enough to get it, you know, immersed in the story. I mean, if you took a lot of stuff and you turned them into books, like if you took the J.J. Star Trek movies and actually turned them into books, they're probably pretty close to unreadable.
Well, they're pretty much unwatchable, so...
But, again, get off my rant box for that. Go back to Lower Decks for a minute. So, I you know, like I said, I loved the first episode of Season 2. That whole opening sequence where she's on the... Beckett Mariner's on the holodeck and all of this, it is... And how she uses it as an outlet for her frustration and how she's feeling. So Boimler was in there, you know. She's so tired of being caught up by playing within the rules because she's being nice to her mother, who's the captain. You know, all of that made for compelling science fiction, Star Trek.
The homage, the major homage in that episode was Ransom as Gary Mitchell.
Yes, yes.
And what I liked about that is they didn't really, I said this before, they didn't really dwell on it. You either get it or you don't. And if you don't, it's not that essential to the story.
Correct.
You're able to...
But there was a little side story going on that was part of that I loved about the chief medical officer, and she's trying to kill him like Kirk killed Mitchell. We gotta...
Yeah.
Let me drop something on him.
Well, we dropped a rock on him. Yeah.
That was awesome. And yes, it ended up being kind of a running gag in the show, but it was also, again, that subtle homage to the original show. Now, what it's going to be interesting, and you know, as we get more into the season of this, which I thought they're worth, but again, I've watched a whole lot of you know, the whole season, so I got a little confused in the timeline.
I don't think
I want to see how they bring, you know, they suddenly brought Boimler back in the first episode as a holodeck recreation. I want to see how they bring Boimler back and they tie Riker and the Titan back into this. And I do think it's also it's an interesting thing. So we know because of the movies that Riker and Troy, after they were married, he becomes captain of the Titan. We know from Star Trek Picard Season 1 that he's still technically in Starfleet, but he had to leave being the captain because of their son.
Yes.
And we're starting to, what I love is how they're filling in some of these gaps with the cartoon, with Lower Decks, so that you have a more complete storyline, yet we don't have to go back and try to CGI our way into, like they're doing in Mandalorian with Luke Skywalker, CGI our way back into a younger Riker as captain of the Titan.
Although, and I can't believe I'm about to say this.
You would be happy that they did that.
If they cast Will Wheaton.
Oh, yeah, as I would.
As Riker, I would buy it.
I would too. But
as much as I hate Will Wheaton.
But, you know, that goes back to our thing about when we're talking about Indiana Jones, one of the things that has been awesome over the years with the James Bond series, good or bad, whether you like, you know, Roger Moore, when I was a kid, Roger Moore to me was 007.
Me too, because he was really my first introduction to the character.
Correct. But they recast, you know, to tell all those Ian Fleming stories and some new stories based on that,
yeah.
Over time they recast 007. But he was still James Bond, and he acted the same way. He just looked a little different, you know? And I, you know, as I got older and I started watching the original ones, you know, then my perspective changed a little bit. And yeah, Sean Connery was much more what I would consider 007 than Roger Moore, who is what I consider 70s disco 007. But, you know, with a couple exceptions, I have enjoyed the way they recast it. I mean, I think Daniel Craig is an amazing 007. But, you know, if they recast Daniel Craig, which they are, the problem is at this point, they're Starbucking him.
Yes. My understanding is in this movie there is a new 007, but they're not calling her James Bond.
Well, it's
which is fine.
No, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. If 007 retires,
if you're going to change it from being a Bond series into a 007 series, do that.
Yes.
But don't call her Bond.
Or don't make her the daughter of James Bond.
Yeah, I don't need Jane Bond.
Yeah.
The Asian robot chick that's going to kill people.
But like you, you know, Will Wheaton looks enough like a young Jonathan Frakes that it would be believable if he came in and he played Riker on the Titan in person.
And he's about the same age as, well, he's the same age as Patrick Stewart when they started
Next Gen.
Yes. Which is, to me...
Yeah, I know. It's mind-blowing.
So it's still believable.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree. If they wanted to go do that... And I think that's something that is on the table.
There's reasons why he hasn't shaved.
Well, there's reasons why he hasn't shaved, and there's also reasons why he's involved in Star Trek and all these... Because they're reintroducing Will Wheaton as somebody who is involved in Star Trek. But they're trying to remove him a little bit from the Wesley Crusher.
Yes.
Because, frankly, it wasn't really Will Wheaton who we hated.
It was
Wesley Crusher. They wrote the character poorly. They didn't do what they said they were going to do with the character. But a lot of that was because Gene had these ideas for the character. And when Gene died, because the show wasn't doing well after the second season, they made some wholesale changes, which did make the show successful, made it Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, and I can recognize the limitations there. I mean, you can see where Gene's influence hurt things in the movies. You know, as much as I love the story in the motion picture, you can see quite a bit of where Gene's influence made that not a...
Well, plus you gotta add in the fact that they were trying to do that as a 2-hour TV pilot for a TV show.
Yes.
And once you give up that idea, it fails as a film. It works as a pilot, but that's not what it wound up being.
Correct.
I mean, all those beauty shots of the Enterprise and...
Well, you did shorten the film by 20 minutes.
I keep saying one of these days I'm going to drop one of the director's cut into my video editing suite and make that movie watchable.
Yeah.
It'll last about a half hour.
Can we CG the different uniforms on there?
Why not?
The only uniform that was good in that was Kirk's Admiral's uniform.
Well, and that's what's hilarious about Star Trek Continues.
Yes.
I finally watched those two I thought I'd seen them before, but
they were good.
They were really good.
They did extremely good. The production quality and the stories were good. And the fact that they got Walter Koenig and some of the other original cast members to come on. And
well, I mean, even Aaron Gray.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me. That truly fan-run production was able to pull in.
Well, it's because those people actors. Were Star Trek fans, as well as being actors either on the show or in other science fiction shows.
That's how you do an homage.
Yes.
If you're going to do an homage, you got to literally recreate what you were trying to do. You can't just remake it, slap some paint on it, and, you know, these guys actually were dedicated to the craft of, well, how did they shoot this? You know, the way they shot it even was they tried to emulate what the original series looked like.
Yes, they did. As opposed to let's lens flare the beauty shot in the beginning of every show or shot. I mean, he did it multiple times in the 2009 Star Trek because he had the lens flare and everything when they brought the Kelvin up. And then when the Kelvin, after the Kelvin's destroyed, they jump to the Enterprise, the first scene outside in space of the Enterprise, there's that lens flare again. And where does the lens flare appear again? In every one of the Star Wars movies that J.J. was involved in.
Well, that was his thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
That's my effect. That's my signature.
You know it's a J.J. production when you see a lens flare. I guess.
Unfortunately, that's the best part of his production. So, anything else besides Star Trek you want to talk about on the entertainment?
I'm trying to think if there was anything else that I have seen lately that's worth talking about.
I have one. So, you know, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction. But Netflix, and I don't watch Netflix a lot. A lot of times I'm the recipient of watching Netflix because somebody else has Netflix on. Other than Lost in Space on Netflix right now, because they've canceled every other good science fiction show that they created on Netflix.
Are they going to do a third season of that?
Yes, and it will be the last season. I would just assume not have Netflix, but I'm not the person who pays for it in our house, so I don't care. But my wife had it on, and she started watching How to Make a Murderer.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I started watching it too. I'm deep into the second season, so...
Okay, so we've watched both first and second seasons. So, it's about this guy. I'm not going to name his name or anything. It's in Wisconsin. But he was accused of raping a woman. And the police just kind of didn't investigate. They just determined that they didn't like the guy. They thought he was poor white trash and he should go to jail. And so he went to jail for 18 years. And while in jail, I mean, he's not educated. He dropped out of high school to run his parents' auto salvage
business.
You know, because his dad got hurt and everything else, he went to jail for 18 years, and he kind of educated himself in the legal library, and he fought and fought and fought and got the conviction overturned.
Well, the thing about that is DNA evidence became a thing. And had he not been exonerated through DNA evidence, he still would have been in prison for the original thing.
But it was it's really weird because... it's a lot about conspiracy, but not conspiracy theories like you think. It's more of a state and local conspiracy, law enforcement and the legal system against this guy. But
I take it further than that.
Oh, I
but
do too.
We can get into that if you want.
But it is completely, completely compelling. And it's so compelling, and the show, I guess... after the first season was so compelling that you started to get almost this Donald Trump type FUD, not, you know, that they used against Donald, against this show, because they're showing, they're saying, though they admitted all this stuff, and these, there's prosecutors who were involved, and they're saying that,
which to me was hilarious, because in the opening scenes of the second season, they run all that,
exactly,
and then they explain all of that, which is, to me, I think, makes it even better.
Well, I'm like, where's the third season, baby?
Yeah.
You know? But it's a documentary, frankly. But it's a documentary where you're getting to talk to, or you're getting to see all the sides of what's going on, and the stories that people are presenting about themselves and presenting about others, and it's also a good look into the legal system, at least the legal system in the state of Wisconsin, but even the federal legal system, because there are whole, you know.
Well, when you exhaust the state system, your appeal to federal courts, it's such a narrow scope of what the federal court system can interfere with.
Exactly.
Is amazing.
It is. Well, and that, I mean, the show in and of itself, just understanding.
And how we got there was an interesting story, too.
Yes.
Because the federal system used to be able to do more than
it can now.
Than what it can now. And how we got there was an important part of that story.
Yes. And, again, I don't want to go into the details, because the show is so compelling that once you start it, and it is kind of slow opening. The first episode, and they're long.
Oh,
each
yeah.
episode is like an hour and a half long, or something. Like
it's an hour plus,
yeah,
for sure.
And stuff, but once you get past that first episode, it's like you're hooked, and you can't. And but I recommend it as a watch for anybody. Just the educational part of it, and understanding how the state and federal and local legal systems work together, is amazing.
And if you are a Law and Order guy, which I was, my time working in criminal justice reform, from where I started to where I am, is such a shift that watching a documentary like this, I almost can tell you what's going to happen before it happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then when it happens and it still doesn't work out, it's heartbreaking.
It is.
I mean, what the police did to the nephew?
Yes, absolutely.
Is infuriating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hence the reason that it's so hard to, without saying details,
Which
I don't want to do, because it really will ruin it for a lot of
people. It will. But resist the urge to go to Google.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And the other thing is, what you want to do is you really want to get a good understanding of what's going on. So you might have to go back and rewatch parts of it to get an idea of why and how all of these events came about. But also, your brain just starts putting together why you get these calls for defund the police and all this, because it basically, this is a story of, if you are poor, you're guilty until proven innocent, and to prove your innocence is almost beyond your ability,
and the power that the state has versus what the little guy has.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the legal team that he was able to assemble absolutely was pretty top notch for being as
and they got
shafted.
Exactly. You know, and you the second season is much more clear than the first season, because he ended up getting a lawyer who has overturned 17 convictions, murder convictions in her career, and she's known for this. She's also, because of that, she's very aware of how to play the games with all the different states and the federal government. And she even makes a comment. She goes, I keep it in the state. I don't want it to go to the federal government at all, because their scope is so narrow. Like Matt said, their scope is so narrow, and what they can actually decide upon is so narrow that it actually hurts you more than if you just keep it in the state. And it's a good understanding of that. Now, you know, state to state, those things are going to vary, but it gives you an understanding about how it actually works and how they work together. Now, the biggest thing I took away from that show is Wisconsin is not a state I would want to go live in, ever. I mean, Milwaukee has had a communist mayor a couple times, and I would argue that Al Franken is a communist senator, so...
Well, and to me, the really eye-opening part of it is the guys that I kind of held up as heroes not that long ago on the national stage
are the guys that should be vilified.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I kind of was pulling for Scott Walker for president for a while, and
yeah,
some of the things that
he just kind of washed his hands of the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how you do that.
No. So, well, I think we want to leave it at there. So we want to hear from you. Please send us some feedback, audio, video, written text, to gizmosapiens@gmail.com, and we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.